Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private paid therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hey, what's up? Welcome to session 44 of Selling the Couch. Hope you're having a fantastic week. My guest today is Dr. Tracy Lowenthal. Tracy actually has two private practice locations out in California. And today we're going to talk all about Tracy's private practice journey and how she got to where she is today. More specifically, we're going to talk all about her fears of getting started in private practice and some of the things that she did to overcome some of those fears. And then we'll also talk about some of the ways that she built relationships with local agencies and local organizations and how that has been so instrumental in her own private practice journey. And then we haven't done this in a while, but we go to the hot couch round where Tracy shares some of her best tips and including some of her morning routines and some of the things that she does in order to be able to function at an optimal level. So here is my conversation with Dr. Tracy Lowenthal from CreativeInsightsCounseling.com. Hey, Tracy, welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hey, Melvin, thanks for having me. This is so exciting.
Yeah, looking forward to our conversation. I feel like you have so much experience when it comes to private practice, and I'm just really excited to hear what you have to share with us.
Oh, thank you. This is really, really a cool thing to be able to do with you.
You know, one of the things that I like to ask private practitioners when they come on is either a quote or a mantra that's really inspired them on their personal or professional journey. What has that been for you?
There's a few, but I think the one that keeps sticking around for me is actually from Yoda, of all people, or all creatures, I should say. And it is, do or do not. There is no try.
What about that quote resonates for you?
That if you're going to do something, you're just going to do it. To say that you're going to try is inviting in failure or the expectation that it might not work out. And I think if you embark on something without expectation, that may be what you manifest. And so the idea of imagining something unfolding as you want it to will help you to achieve that goal, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that quote and how you explained it is so valuable when it comes to having a small business. How do you think that translates into a private practice?
I think envisioning what you want and truly just figuring out what the steps are to achieving that and marking those steps off your to-do list, literally just planning it and moving toward it.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. When we were talking the pre-conversation, you said, you know, you had connected with Mari as well. And I remember when Mari was on the podcast, she mentioned something very similar where she had this outline. She had this long-term vision of what she wanted. And then she put those steps almost backwards, right? And then started at that very first step. And is that something similar you've done, or how have you gone about it?
I'm not quite as organized as Mari is in that way. I think of what I want to do and I begin doing it.
Yeah. So yours, you just, it's like almost just following up with that inspiration.
Yes. Yeah. And so then I think of what I want to do. And then about halfway through the process of achieving that goal, I've begun to create the next goal.
Mm. Yeah. And I think part of it is just being flexible, right, in that moment, realizing that something may come up as you start to go down that path.
Yeah, absolutely. And then what is attractive to me or what is interesting or motivating to me changes as I grow professionally as well.
Yeah. And I guess how do you, I don't know, this is sometimes a challenge that I feel, but how do you figure out like what to prioritize? Cause you know, there's something, you know, for example, for me, like I'll get very inspired by something and I'll start on that path and there's something else that will come up and it's like kind of similar, but I really should be focusing on that first thing. So how do you figure that out and sort through that?
Right. Not be distracted by the shiny things.
Right.
It's hard. It's really hard. I think I just noticed that about myself when I'm working toward a goal and then I find myself being distracted. I have to ask myself, is that an avoidance technique? Am I trying to avoid the goal I'm working on? If so, why? Or is that something worthy of my exploration? That other shiny thing that I just saw and wanted to move to. And if it is, can I add it to the list of things I want to do in the future versus letting it deter me from what I'm working on now?
So even if you do want to eventually do it, you just put it on a list and then still keep focusing on that first thing.
Yes, that's what I try to do. I mean, it's hard in terms of blogging and things like that, because there are things that you have to jump on right away sometimes. And get started on those and but not losing sight of what you were working on before. So always trying to get back to what you were working on before if you do have to leave it for a few weeks or something.
I want us to take a little bit of a step back and back to when you first started your private practice. How did you even make that decision to jump into private practice?
I made that decision when I was still in grad school. I knew that I wanted to work part-time. I wanted to start a family. I actually started a family while I was in grad school, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be my own boss. I wanted to have a flexible schedule. I wanted to pick and choose who I worked with, and I knew that was unlikely to happen if I was working in a clinic setting or a community mental health setting. I did practicum training in community mental health and a clinic setting, so I got those experiences, but I knew when I was done with grad school that I wanted something different for myself. So I knew pretty early on in the process that that's what I was going to do.
So when you were in grad school, did you take any like real practical or concrete steps as to build that foundation? So when you graduated, you were good to go?
I did. I planned my practicum placements and my pre-doc and my post-doc placements in locations that would be a wonderful referral source for me when I was ready to have a private practice.
So
in the cities, even the locations were planned so that they would correspond well with working with those same people. So it was relationship building.
Yeah. So you're much more organized than you give yourself credit for.
I don't write anything down, but if I do, I can't read it later because it's all chicken scratches and stuff. But
yeah. So you figured out the geographic location, and then you actually figured out the actual different environments that you wanted to work in, whether it was a hospital, community mental health, university counseling center, whatever it was.
Yes, that's right.
As you were going through internship and postdoc and you wrapped up and became licensed, what did you do after that in terms of starting to build that private practice?
It's funny. The first thing that I did, I think the day I got licensed, is I went on Psychology Today. And I emailed everybody, and I'm not kidding, I emailed every practitioner in my city and asked them if they had an office to rent. That was the first thing I did. And I got an immediate response, and that's how I got my first office. And then I listed myself on Psychology Today. I went to a local university counseling center and introduced myself and asked if I could be on their referral list, had lunch with them. And it just kind of took off from there. Those relationships and the ones I created in my pre-doc and my post-doc became my biggest sources of referrals right away.
Tracy, it's amazing. Like, I've had a lot of conversations with practitioners, and sometimes I think we overcomplicate private practice, right? What you basically did was you built relationships, you took one small step at a time. And it was the cumulative effect of taking those small steps that led to you being able to form that private practice.
Yes. Yeah. And it's really, it's like you said, it's really little steps. You know, once I got an office space, then I thought, oh no, I need furniture. And that was the next step. You know, it was basically very small, simple steps, but that's how you start.
I was thinking even back to just what we were talking about earlier. So maybe part of it is that you do have a vision of what it will look like, but you don't become so rigid and so perfectionistic that, oh, I need to have this figured out, this figured out, this figured out, because reality is that's not going to happen. So maybe part of it is just being flexible, just having a general vision and then going forward.
Exactly. Kind of a skeleton vision, and then you can fill in the spaces as things unfold for you.
How did you overcome that fear or that initial like anxiety or insecurity of starting in private practice? You had your office, you had to figure out furniture, and then imagine at some point you'd figure out, how am I going to get clients?
It's funny. I think I finished furnishing my office the same morning that I saw my first client.
Wow.
So I mean, it really, a lot of it was, I think, like I said, good fortune, and some of it was obviously determination, but I put myself on Psychology Today and I started getting calls right away from there. And then I was getting referrals from people that knew me right away. I mean, so like I said, I furnished my office and saw my first client in the same day.
That's amazing. Did you get paneled, or were you doing private pay at that point?
No. Yeah. I have never, I've only been on a couple panels. And mostly I was willing to bill out of network benefits for people, but mostly I've been private pay.
Nice. And then, so you just give you generate a super bill for them if they want.
Yeah, it depends. With some of my college students, I will bill out of network for them, because if they're coming to see me, they're probably already overwhelmed. And the idea of keeping track of a super bill and sending it to an insurance company can sometimes be too much. So I'll do out of network billing for them. But most others, yes, I'll collect at the time of service, and then I'll give them a super bill every month or so they can submit for reimbursement.
Actually, I think this would be helpful. So explain that part to me, the out-of-network benefits. So a college student comes in, you're considered an out-of-network provider for them, for their insurance.
Yes.
Right. And then what do you do after, like, what do you do after a session in terms of billing?
Yeah. So what'll happen is, if someone wants to see me and I'm not paneled, I'll get their insurance information from them, and I'll call, or I'll have my insurance billing person call the insurance company and find out what their benefits are. And as long as they do have out of network benefits, because some plans won't cover that. As long as they do, then I just find out what the student's copay is. I collect that copay at the time of service. And then every 4 or 5 sessions, I will submit a bill to the insurance company using my billing person. And then they'll send me whatever portion they're willing to pay for me.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then do you usually, it sounds like you actually see the person and then figure that out. Or have you also tried to figure that out beforehand, before you actually see them, to figure out whether they're out of network or anything like that?
No, I used to do that. And that kind of sometimes will create a problem. Then you've seen someone 3 times before the insurance has responded to you. And then, you know, if the insurance says, oh, nope, sorry, we're not going to pay you, then you've got this person who's got a substantial amount of money owed to you, which I find then will impact the therapeutic relationship if that becomes a struggle sometimes. And then your focus shifts, right? And that's not beneficial to anybody. So finding out ahead of time what the coverage is going to be, if it exists at all, is really important. And then if it doesn't exist, I'll go back to the person and say, you know, this is the situation. I can refer you, or we can try and find another resource, or you can decide that you still want to see me and pay out of pocket.
Yeah, I mean, it's very smart thinking about the very practical aspects of it before the therapeutic relationship is established.
It's hard, though. I think when you're a new practitioner, you want to take every possible client that comes through the door. And I did that for a little while. I think everybody does. You kind of operate from a scarcity mindset, and I need to say yes to everybody. And that's, hopefully, I think, as part of being a private practitioner, that's part of your evolution, is realizing that you don't have to do that.
Just shifting a little bit, what is a common mistake or a couple of mistakes that either you made early on in your private practice journey, or you've noticed that other folks make, that you think, you know, it somehow impacts the private practice journey?
I think that's it, is what I mentioned a minute ago, is this idea that you have to take every person that walks through the door or calls you. And I think that creates two issues. One, you may begin to step outside your scope of practice. You may begin to work with folks that maybe you don't have the skill set for, and that's problematic, obviously, for ethical reasons, and then the client's not getting the best care. But then having that mindset leads to this fear and this anxiety that you're not doing enough, that you're not building your practice enough, and you have to see every single person, and that I think that creates a feeling around your private practice that's problematic. It's not healthy to operate from there, and then you begin to probably make other mistakes in your practice.
Yeah, almost coming from a fear-based mindset.
Exactly, exactly.
Just my last question before we transition to the hot couch round. What advice would you give to someone that wants to go into private practice or is maybe right there, but they haven't gotten their first client and is trying to get their first client?
I think building those relationships, finding, you know, figure out who your ideal client is. For me, when I first started, that was working with college students. And so I reached out to the local university counseling centers and I called and I said, I'd love to be on your referral list. What would that look like? And for me, luckily, the thing they wanted to do was have lunch. And so that was really terrifying for me, to be honest with you. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to sit across the table from these PhD professor types. And you know, how funny that is now. But at the time, I was terrified. But that relationship not only got me clients, I got teaching jobs out of that. So really meeting someone face to face, if you can, going over and talking about what you would like to offer, finding out what their needs are. I think those are the ways that you will begin to get clients, is because people will know you and know who you are as a person.
Yeah, it's so interesting you say it, because I think in this day of social media, and I'm all for that, I think though at the end of the day, there is something very powerful about someone getting to know you at a much deeper level and being able to trust you.
Yes, exactly. Because that's what it comes down to, right? I'm not going to refer to you if I don't trust you. And if I haven't met you in person and only have minimal experience of you through social media, I may not feel comfortable referring to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you ready for the hot couch round?
I guess so. Let's try it. We'll see if I'm ready, right?
Yeah. What's a daily habit that you believe contributes to your success?
It's an almost daily habit, but exercise. I think if I don't exercise, I am not my best self, and it helps reduce anxiety around my practice for sure, to go out and burn some energy. So that is something that I do almost daily that I think has a positive impact on my practice.
Do you work out in the mornings, afternoons? Like, is there a consistency with it?
It's both. I do some classes in the morning and I dread getting up that early. I hate it. I'm in the car and I'm miserable and I get there and I'm like grumbling about it. And then when I'm done, I'm like, hey, I'm done. I don't have to do that later. You know?
Well, it's something very like productive about it. I'm also a big like morning workout person.
Yeah. It feels like you got it in under the wire, right? And then sometimes I'll think, oh, I have to figure out where I'm going to exercise today. And then I realize, oh no, I already did. It's awesome. I'm done.
That's awesome. What's an online resource that has been invaluable to your private practice journey?
We use two pretty regularly, and I think Psychology Today would be the first one. I mean, that's obviously where I first listed myself and started to get clients from there. And then we also use Therapy Notes for our online record keeping, and I find that that's really convenient and saves a lot of time in the office and is really secure for client paperwork too.
Nice. What's one tip that you would give to someone who's thinking about starting a private practice?
Figure out where you want to start it and start meeting people in that area.
And then imagine that you were starting your private practice all over again. You have $500 and your laptop. What's the first step that you would take toward building your practice?
I think we talked in the pre-conversation too, that I would do what I did. And that was to reach out to all the therapists in my town and begin to look for office space. Because doing that, not only did I find an office space, but I created relationships with people through that encounter, and they're relationships that remain today. I'm across the hall from one of the people that tried to help me in that beginning stage.
Yeah, that's amazing. We are really in an awesome profession.
Yes, totally. We all love to help each other.
Tracy, you are off the hot couch.
Thank you.
Survived.
I survived.
Tracy, what are the best ways that folks can get in touch with you?
they can find us all over the place. We're on our website, and that's creativeinsightscounseling.com. And I always like to say insights is plural. Sometimes people don't type it in correctly, and that creates a problem. We're on Facebook as Creative Insights Counseling. We are on Twitter at CI Counseling. And my direct phone number is 909-240-7833. And anyone can reach me that way or send me an email at drtracy@creativeinsightscounseling.com.
Awesome. Tracy, thank you so much for doing this, and take good care.
Thank you so much, Melvin. Have a great day.
Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Tracy. Man, I feel like I took a lot of great information away. You know, one of the biggest things that stood out to me, and a lot of clinicians that I've had on the podcast have said this, that is the importance of really focusing on building solid relationships with colleagues in the community. And that's one thing that I would highly suggest that you do. I think a lot of times when we start our private practice journey, we want to think about some of the other things that go into private practice, like building our websites or thinking about furniture or thinking about some location for our office. And all of those are really important, but equally important is taking the time to build that foundation of relationships with those around you, because those are the people eventually that are going to be your referral sources. Those are the people that could potentially be in a supervision group with you. And those are the relationships that you're going to build long term. You can find more information about Tracy and her practice again at creativeinsightscounseling.com, and all of the resources that Tracy mentioned, you can find that at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 4-4. Have a great week, and I will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in the quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.